What a time, what a warm and wondrous time. So sweet a shining moment in the sun. Oh, what a time. Was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done. The moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time?
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. And today is July the 15th, 2011. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm joined by my co-host in the studio, Dennis Reimars, today. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm very well, Jay.
And the farm market this morning was?
Absolutely wonderful. Beautiful great weather, yep. And we got bread.
That's good. I was going to ask. I gave him money for bread.
And this time I spent it on bread.
That's good. Okay. Gave you bread for bread.
You did, and it's in your office on your desk. But it's not just me in here today.
No. Our very, very special show for today includes Michigan 15th District Representative George DeRaney. So, Representative DeRaney, how are you? Are you exhausted from the last 6 months?
Well, it's been interesting, but I'm still have a lot of energy left.
I hope so, because you still have another term to go, another year, second year of your term to go.
Yeah. Another year and a half.
Of course, George, let me just mention, first of all, that you're kind of lucky, unlike all the gerrymandering that's been going on nationally and also in the state of Michigan. You're still representing pretty much the contiguous, just the city of Dearborn, amazingly, right?
Right, that's true. I was very lucky. My district basically is unchanged. I have 47 out of 50 precincts in Dearborn, and I still have 47 out of 50 precincts. A couple of them have changed, but basically they're the same.
And I think that's the way it should be. Of course, I know that redistricting has to have approximately the same number of people in each district, but certain sort of, I think, geographic and historical associations should be always taken into account when that's done. And it's rarely the case. The party in power usually gets to draw the lines wherever they want to. And, right. and sometimes the constituencies are not very similar. It would be very hard to represent, I would think, a district that's sort of, let's say, somewhat rural, somewhat urban, yep. for example, just giving one example. But you're fortunate in that. I can't remember how that happened, but I think there was some debate. I know Gary Warrenchuk, when he was a Republican, years ago as representative, I think he sort of got a deal somewhere that Dearborn would stay intact, and apparently the Republicans are still of the mind that they think that must be a good district for them, even though yourself as a Democrat was right. elected soundly last time.
I thought it was all because of me that they left it the same, but I don't know.
I hope so. Well, I just think Dearborn, we have the history, we have similar problems. Okay, we have an east side and a west side, but I think that it's easier to represent a district that has right. That sort of historic similarity.
Dearborn was one of the few cities, as you know, in Wayne County that actually gained population. So it was an interesting situation for the city. And the number that they're looking at was 89,000. Each district should be around 89,000 in population, give or take 5%. So if you add in that 5%, it brings you up to about 93,000-94,000. And unfortunately, Dearborn's population is 98,000. So I couldn't have the whole city. So this was the next.
Oh, no, they sliced something off?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got 47 out of 50 precincts.
Okay.
Again, which is what I had last time.
Oh, okay. So pretty much everybody that had to vote for a 15th district rep will be in the same situation now. Is there just a few less? Was it east side, west side?
Yeah, east side. East side. Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, Dearborn was broken up into two congressional seats.
Right.
Conyers and Dingell. Now Dingell has all of Dearborn again.
Yeah.
So that'll be easier for people to remember.
I think so. And even for, I know we have term limits, which I've never been in favor of, but, even for the representative to keep in touch with the same constituency
right.
groups,
mm-hmm.
they split up your district, and, well, who do you talk to now? You got to reestablish all those connections. So
right.
it's very difficult, I imagine, for many of the other representatives.
It is. Dearborn's really quite lucky. We have one state senator that covers the whole city of Dearborn, Senator Morris Hood. We have one congressman now. Dingell will take care of the whole city. And virtually, for your state house seat, mm-hmm. myself, will take care of Dearborn.
Great.
So we're pretty fortunate.
Good. Okay. Well, it's sort of been a tough time for Democrats in terms of any agendas or items that they had in the Michigan House and Senate, especially with the Republican governor, Governor Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, what are you most proud of? I mean, it's only been 6 months, and it's hardly enough time to write a bill and get it into a committee, I guess.
Right.
But what are you most proud of in your struggles? Just saying no a lot of times?
We hate to be the party of no, because the other party was the party of no last time around. So I think we're looking for cooperation. We're looking for bipartisanship wherever we can find it. And it's unfortunate, especially the tax bill that was pushed through. We offered 146 amendments to that tax bill, and not one of them was implemented. So that's a bit frustrating when you have 146 amendments and not one of them was even looked at. So.
And you have to believe, although, of course, I haven't read them, that some of them were, like, actually good for the state. I'm just guessing. Out of 146, bipartisan analysis, if there is such a thing, not in government these days,
right.
I guess, but just looking, you have to figure that some of the 146, okay, at least one or two.
Right.
And they were just voted on sort of preemptively,
mm-hmm.
Just because they came from Democrats, probably.
I mean,
that's the only thing I can figure.
Right, right. Well, that's basically it. I've been, you talked about getting a bill out of committee. Actually, I had one bill that actually made it out of committee, and that is in regard to Henry Ford Community College. I sponsored a bill that would have allowed the culinary arts program to have be able to have their students learn to cook with alcoholic beverages, beer, wine, whatever, because I think it's an important part of their learning process to have a culinary arts program that's complete to let people know how to do the pairings with the foods, with the liqueurs and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And Henry Ford Community College does not have that in place right now. I proposed that, Bill, and of course it's been talked about for 8 years, 10 years, depending on who you talk to have that go through. But I had bipartisan support on that. It came out of committee 14-1. But it never made it to the floor.
Yeah, so, and it does apply to any community college that has a hospitality ed program.
Right,
hospitality. If it does get voted on and passed, which may not happen this
Right, well, this the Senate has now taken up virtually the same bill.
Okay.
And it passed out of their committee when they met last week. So between the Senate bill and my bill, I think we'll get something done.
You know, the other aspect, too, here is, and of course, I'm sorry for the community college that don't have a hospitality program, is the ability for the hospitality program to put on benefits for the college for donors who might expect a little wine or alcoholic beverages included with the meal or a cash bar or whatever, all to benefit the scholarship fund. It's a major way to raise money, but to have an event like that off campus, either you go begging and pleading to the nearby hotels, or you have to pay their prices or their slightly reduced prices. I know you've had to do that before, and it sort of wastes the whole point of trying to raise money if you have to pay for the banquet hall up front on top of it. So and here at WHFR, we were able to have two blues benefits. We actually had live blues recorded twice, 97 and 2002, I believe it was, and we made record albums out of them and sold them to benefit our funding, which the majority of which we have to raise on our own, like most sponsored activities at the college here. And well, we just figured that it would make a better evening since it was going to be a long evening. We had six bands each time, one after the other set up, and that is that we had a cash bar, wine or beer served, and I had to get the permit. And let me tell you, the process is like a 3 or 4 month process.
Sure.
We have to get bonded. We have to get, of course, approval from the college and approval from the trustees, and then I have to get an insurance bond from a little insurance office down the street. Then I go to Dearborn City Police Department. Right. And I have to go. So in a way, this is just cutting the red tape for institutions. And I think we were limited to only like 3 to 5 for the whole college for the whole year, even going through that hassle.
Okay.
That you couldn't go over it. You just couldn't. So there are many times when I think, you know, some of the bills that get passed, not by yourself, sir. We're talking to George Duraney representing Dearborn to Lansing, 15th District. But some of the bills are like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I often wonder, are they really necessary? They're helping maybe a small constituency a little bit, but it seems like it takes up a lot of valuable time. It could go to some of the bigger issues.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, this, it only benefits community colleges like and hospitality ed programs, but it really removes a lot of that awful, ugly paperwork and hassle for responsible institutions. So thank you for that. It almost, I don't know, it might have seemed to you that, gee, this is so logical and so obvious, and we got to go through committee, and we got to get the votes, and we got to, you know, shake hands, and but that's the whole process.
It is the process, and it's a process that I'm learning on a daily basis, and one actually I'm enjoying quite a bit because, you know, as you've stated a few times, I am a Democrat, but I'm also a moderate because I listen to both sides of the issue, and I appreciate learning another point of view, and I think maybe that's one of the reasons why I've been maybe a little bit more successful in my relationships with the other party, because I understand there's another point of view. And I think if we did more of that, things would go a little bit quicker.
If people even people from another party, political party, can keep an open mind, there has to be common ground that is just basically good for the people of the state.
Right.
Despite your political theory. I think political theories and philosophies are wonderful things, but the real world needs that kind of adjustment. And, in a way, I don't like the term compromise, but it's an awareness of the basic principles that are really good for the vast majority. Now, sometimes you have to do things that are good for a very, very displaced and disenfranchised minority. Sometimes you have to get things in place that to get the minority equal rights and so on. But I would think that what's good for the people, that there's common elements there that have to apply. I'm certainly hoping that for the the crisis in Washington, D.C. right now, but even in the state of Michigan, for too long, people saw when the budget crises used to come in past years, and I think we got close to the edge or maybe went over by a day
it
or so
once,
that that's just inexcusable. No one that elects, I think, Democrats or Republicans, whoever they voted for, really want to see that kind of impasse, that most people, I think, would say there's got to be some common ground here that will save the day. I thank you for fighting the good fight.
Thanks.
I'm sure it was maybe a too sudden awareness that was thrown upon you. But if you can keep an open mind, I think that's the big step forward.
Right.
In many cases, you were trying to, though, ameliorate or lessen the effect of some of the things that have been passed. Like seniors in Dearborn are obviously concerned because their pensions, like for myself, a retired teacher, even though part-time here at the station now, we're going to get a pension tax. But there were some compromises made. It wasn't what Snyder originally proposed. There was able to be some minor adjustments, like for people who had been retired for quite a while.
Right.
There's a fly in the office.
Fly in the ointment there.
Dennis, you're okay. Dennis is going to be the flag swatter here.
Yeah, probably not. But
thanks. But we, you know, it won't be as for those people who've been retired for a good number of years, and I don't remember the cutoff was 1946 birth date or what it was.
46.
Yep. Yeah, and I was born 2 days into 46, so I missed it by 2 days. But nonetheless, and that doesn't seem fair to me, but nonetheless, so close, that should count.
Yeah.
Any, that's what my students always say.
Oh, geez, yeah.
I was only 40 points away from an A, so I failed. But isn't that close enough to pass? No. But still, that was good because they had the fixed income, they've been retired for a while, and they had their plans set, and to upset people like that would really be unfair. And so there was, and I would assume those amendments came from Democrats.
Well, you know, I think,
or at least the people in general call the Republican reps too.
I think the governor was aiming high at the beginning, you know, and just saying, okay, this is what we want to do.
Sure.
And I think he knew that that wasn't going to fly. It wasn't going to fly with the Democratic Party, and it wasn't even going to fly within his own party. Some of the lofty goals he had set for the taxing everybody's pension at the same rate at the same time. I was fortunate enough to have a sit-down with him and a few other Democrats, and he asked us if we had any questions, and I pressed him on the issue, and I said, there should be some kind of a cutoff. There should be some kind of a cap or something where it doesn't take effect until it reaches a certain amount of money, $20,000, $30,000, whatever it is. And he looked at me and he said, George, yeah, I think there is going to be some compromise in there. And this was 2 or 3 months ago. So I think even he was thinking about that.
Right. The people that have other pensions, there are many kinds of pensions that you can have from different corporations and that, or other financial resources, or maybe they are gainfully employed still, part-time or full-time. If they are earning a lot of that money themselves, they don't really need that pension as much, and the tax is a 4% at most. Many states have that, of
many
course,
states
or more,
have it,
or more, but still.
But traditionally, we have not taxed pensions in Michigan because it was a promise that we made to our seniors saying, you know, we want you to stay in Michigan. We want you to live here and be with your children and grandchildren and make it easier for you to spend your golden years in the state that you grew up in and that you love. So it was kind of, I think, going back on our promise a little bit to the seniors.
I'm sure. Let's move to education. The budget was cut to, a huge amount was lost by the four-year institutions.
Yeah.
Community college, we held our own, at least, I think, in terms of funding. But the K-12 were facing major cuts, and especially in Dearborn, there was some special funding that Dearborn had for, I think, bilingual, and also what used to be called at-risk. And so I know that some of the money has been restored because the state maybe had a little more money laying around. I don't know what it was, so that the cuts are not quite as bad as before. But tell me, in Dearborn, have we still lost the at-risk and the bilingual money?
Yeah, we fought for that. That was the 31A money that only Dearborn and one other community lost. Everybody else was able to keep theirs. In Dearborn's case, it was $5.1 million. that they decided not to give to us, even though we have 70% of our students in Dearborn in a reduced or free lunch program, and we do have the bilingual program. So if anybody qualified for this money, it was certainly the city of Dearborn. Mm-hmm. And all we asked was for us to be able to qualify for that money, not give us the money necessarily, but let us be in the pool with everybody else to let us qualify for it. And it wasn't really taking this wasn't extra money that we were going to give the city of Dearborn. This is money now that's going to be distributed through that $5 million will be distributed throughout the state to a tune of about $3.75 per student for every student. That's how much they'll gain by not taking it away from
the
city.
So it lost quite a bit of impact. In other words, for Dearborn, it would have had far more impact than the $3 per student that
they'll
carry now.
Right. And it didn't make any sense to us. But we fought for it. We worked hard, and we talked to the senators, and it didn't pass. You know, they just took it out of the budget. So that was along with the $460 per student that everybody lost.
And public employees, people working for the state in various capacities, they now are paying more of their health care costs themselves.
Well, Dearborn is also unique in that regard because, you know, the K-12, Dearborn Federation of Teachers came up with their own plan, so now they'll be handling their own health care benefits. So that's something that Dearborn is really above the curve on, and I think we got a lot of kudos for that in Lansing for taking a page out of higher initiative.
Yeah, and as I understand it, as I've lived it, something like 12 years ago, the AFT Local 1650 here at Henry Ford Community College, we were able to negotiate and get control of, you know, where the money would go and trying to save money. And we had our own, within the union, our own team of, like, mainly people from the business department, analyzing year-round proposals from other insurance companies where we could get. And so for years, it's a little bit embarrassing, we had much better health care plans for the same or less money than the K-12 did. Mm-hmm. Because the K-12, they were still depending on the administration to have the time to go through that and get bids constantly. And they, of course, most administrators don't have that. It's interesting, in Dearborn Public Schools, they just had to hire an assistant director of human resources.
To the tune of $97,000 a year.
Because the state now allows the laying off of teachers not to be done exclusively by tenure in the contract, but however the administration wants to choose quality or whatever.
Yeah.
And but they need to, so they're forced to actually hire someone else to get the data so they can make that choice. So I don't know if that's saving money in the long run or not.
No.
It's there's a lot of ironies out here. Let me move on to a couple of other questions. And one just came up, was presented to me today, and as a member of the AFT, actually the AFT Adjunct Faculty Union. The part-timers actually have a union here, and we have, we're now on our second contract that was approved, and so we have some legal status to make our demands known, and I think unions are a great thing. Sure, some are not working as well as others, but you can say that about banks and a lot of institutions,
right,
that some are not working as well as others. One of the things that we mentioned here that seemed to often got national press is the second bill for the state of Michigan that Governor Snyder recommended and got passed, the Public Act 4 of 2011, allows the governor to declare a local government or school district in receivership and appoint an emergency manager to take control with a lot of power to get rid of contracts, to take away all the power from any local officials. It seems very tyrannical to yours truly. And, of course, the opinions on this show are only those of the folks that are here, not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. So I had I have a petition now that I received from the AFT, and you know, they actually would like to repeal that. Now, folks, just for those listening, it wouldn't end the ability of the state to appoint an emergency financial manager, but it wouldn't, they wouldn't have this really dictatorial powers to come in and just eliminate everything without even necessarily any discussion or response from elected officials. And so I think this second one ought to be repealed. What do you think?
Can I sign that?
Yes. All right. This is a live moment, historic moment on the air. Representative George DeRaney is signing the bill to repeal, and if we get enough signatures, and there may not be, of course, but this will be on the November ballot, to repeal the Emergency Manager Act this is, again, the more powerful one, the very tyrannical, dictatorial one that is that Benton Harbor is suffering under right now, mm-hmm. and could be the case in Detroit soon.
That's right.
It allows them to move in almost at any time and just do whatever they want to. And that's, you know, I'm not sure that...
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Durrani has just put his signature and information on this petition. I'm going to get you later, Dennis, and see what you think, but don't have to commit yourself
about his signature?
Now.
It looks great.
Right.
Actually, Northville schools are now, unfortunately, looking into an emergency financial management. Mm. I just heard about that not too long ago. But, yeah, it really dilutes the power of electorate to elect people that they want to serve on their boards. And now... the financial manager or emergency manager, they're trying to take the word financial out of there because they want him or her to take care of any measures. It doesn't have to be financial measures. But the emergency manager could pretty much say to the council members or to the board members, you're gone. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. So is it, I don't mean
the
to
mayor
sound
too.
Naive. Yeah. I have an innocent, very innocent question here. So the same people that set the guidelines that in turn offer the schools less money, they're the same ones that can appoint somebody to come in and fix that problem?
Right,
that
exactly.
Kind of doesn't. Am I the only one who thinks that doesn't make sense?
Okay. Yeah, it's self-serving.
Well,
yeah, for sure.
I think when necessary, if a school district or a city is bankrupt in receivership, then the state should provide some assistance, advice, counsel, work with people, try to get heads together. You know, I think Governor Granholm had to come in at a moment when there was some crisis over Kwame Kilpatrick. It seems like she had to come down and do some negotiating herself. But I think there are times when that has to be done, that one part of government has to come in and help the other, but to totally disrespect all of the elected officials and to be able to make decisions without any connection to anything necessarily, I mean, that could certainly be abused. And I think the first emergency financial manager for the Detroit Public Schools, was it Robert Bob?
It sure was.
He got into some troubles. There were some questions about the legality of some of his rulings, and he left, I think, because of that. And now we have, is it Roy Roberts or Roy Rogers?
GM?
Yeah, well, this guy was at GM, and that's not much of a recommendation. What does he know about the schools? And I heard an interview once that, well, I know what good schooling is and should be, and I'm just going to make my decisions. And well, this is sort of a cowboy. I mean, I'm thinking of Roy Rogers, but he's dead. So, you know, that's not the way someone coming in should be working to solve problems. You know, just, well, I've got all the power, so you got to do whatever I say.
Right.
Well, that doesn't mean it's going to work out right.
Well, of course, the law's been on the books for a while, as you've alluded to, Granholm and others.
The first one, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this overextends that power way too much. And it also gives them the power to cut salaries, too, as they did in Pontiac. First of all, they went in and they cut the mayor's salary in half and the city council salary in half. And then a few weeks later, that wasn't good enough, so they just said, you know what, mayor, you're not going to get paid. They didn't remove them. They just said you weren't going to get paid. So the mayor and the council in the city of Pontiac are now no longer being paid because the emergency manager thought it was best.
Let me ask quickly about the proposal for a second bridge. Now, Governor Snyder was supposedly in favor of that, and the Democrats in the past almost unanimously were in favor of going ahead with that proposal, and it hasn't happened yet. Are there some Republican holdouts, or is it just all this advertising by the one guy that owns the present bridge that's swaying the political
atmosphere? Well, he has some influence on the people that he helped during the last campaign.
Get elected, yeah,
right,
sure.
Of course. Yeah. I asked the governor that question, and I said, are we going to have bipartisanship on this issue? And he said yes, and my question was, sorry if I was being a little rude, I said, is it going to be true bipartisanship, or are we going to get 5 or 6 Republicans that are going to join us, or are we going to get 20, 30, or 40 Republicans to join us on this bill? And he said, George, I can't answer that question for you. I don't know. I can't promise you the bipartisanship.
You know, I know I'm stereotyping Republicans, but if they're in favor of business, that business and, you know, it's always good and ways to make more money and set up more businesses, maybe employing more people even, then a second bridge has got to help the economy of Michigan and Canada both. And this partnership just seems reasonable to me, and apparently to most Democrats in the past, and I think Snyder saw it from a businessman's point of view.
Right.
It just, and my only thought is that Republicans wouldn't go for it because they're beholden to some rich donors, like the man that owns the Ambassador Bridge.
Yeah.
And that's just not a right way to make a decision either.
I think he wanted to get that settled before we took our in-district break on June 30th. Right. It didn't happen. So I think it's going to be high on his priorities when we go back in September.
Yeah. Well, we know you've got a challenge. You'd like to probably reverse a number of the things that have happened, try to get more money for education in general, if possible, in next year.
Right. We're working on that still, and we're keeping the fight up, and we think that's something that we should be able to bargain with the governor. You know, if you want the bridge, maybe we can do something about education.
Just wrapping up here, George, we know you've got another meeting to go to today, and we really appreciate having you, George Durrani, a representative from Dearborn, to the Michigan House in Lansing. Any bigger new ideas that got any traction, or anybody that maybe starting in the fall? Michigan Fair Tax won't be on the ballot. That didn't get out of committee or any support.
No.
Ending term limits, nobody wants that for some reason.
And I still hear rumors about that, and going along with the part-time legislature, too. I think if it happened, it would maybe have to be a package.
State bank, nobody thinks that's
nobody's
too radical. The other banks don't like it.
Well, that's true.
Jack Lessenberry has had two editorials on this in the Metro Times, and this week especially. He talks about, again, Detroit just can't manage its own affairs very well for a number of reasons, like the lack of population, the lack of property values these days. He thinks, and some other people, urban experts think, that you should redefine, and I say you, the legislature, I didn't know this, defines the city limits. Mm-hmm. They can say City of Detroit equals Wayne, Oakland, Macomb County, and they can just do it. I didn't know. I don't know if that's good. And he says the place to start, in fact, is make Detroit city limits the same as Wayne County. That would be less politically upsetting to Oakland and Macomb. He points out experts that said that the successful urban areas around the country are those that have been expanding, taking over suburbs and keeping their tax base secure and so on.
Is Indianapolis one of those areas, I believe?
Well, I'm aware that Austin, Texas certainly is, because I visit there a lot. He gave an example of the top 30 cities in the U.S. that almost 20 of them have been expanding by incorporating nearby suburbs and just becoming a bigger city, and keeping their tax base solid. And of course, that does mean that some of the problems of Detroit would have to be settled or solved by money from the taxpayers in the suburbs, so-called, or in the other areas of Wayne County.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably too radical and crazy an idea for the legislature to talk about, maybe, right?
I think at this point now, we've got to concentrate on more.
That Detroit would probably have to go belly up first before somebody would think about that.
Well, probably.
That'd
be
too bad.
Make it smaller before it gets bigger, you know? Seriously. I mean, with the population.
Split it up into only the rich communities and let the rest be frontier areas.
Or let the cities grow around it. Why did you pick Indianapolis? That's an interesting question.
I thought that they had done something down in Indianapolis.
They're definitely growing.
Yeah.
I was just through there. It's a beautiful city.
Right.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah,
really
something
pretty
similar to what you just mentioned.
I think you're right.
Yep.
Hope to see you around town this summer after your responsibilities in Lansing or you were let off for a while. When do you have to go back? Officially in September?
Officially in September. We're meeting next week, and then we've got another meeting in late August. But I'll be in Dearborn. We're calling this our in-district time, where I'm knocking on doors, meeting with people. Knocked on 3,000 doors already.
That's awesome.
Great.
And I'm going to continue to do that. And people, I'm happy to say, are enjoying seeing me on their front doors.
Will we see you at homecoming?
Of course. Actually, I'm working in the information booth that weekend.
Well, be sure to come by WHFR's booth, and maybe we can coordinate a time that we can be sure to catch you.
Love to, Jay.
Sell you some CDs.
Representative from Dearborn, Michigan, the 15th District, which is Dearborn, to the legislature in Lansing, George Durrani, thank you so much for your time today, and we're going to be seeing you more, of course, in the future. Thanks for all your service for the people of Dearborn.
Thank you.
We're going to take this little break and come on back with a big story about what's going to be on the ballot for Dearborn millage request and advisory questions coming up in November. Just approved this last Tuesday. You can't get that information from your papers, from your paper websites. There's just one other indie website or independent news website that we've got this from. So we'll be back after this break, and stay tuned for that big story. The WHFR Monday Forum, an hour of a wide variety of one or more talk show programs from 6 to 7 p.m., some of which are locally produced.
Today turns into yesterday, leaving only words we say for this time.
New ideas and information, different each week, not available on other Detroit stations. That's why we're the station making waves, WHFR.FM. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to whfr@hfcc.edu.
The good times, the hard times, this time is our time.
The WHFR Monday Forum, 6 to 7 p.m. And also listen to all locally produced talk shows on WHFR Tuesday Forum from 1 to 2 p.m. Yeah, that was my voice. I'm not humble. very excited about the WHFR Monday Forum. You know, we have a forum show, a talk show locally produced, the topics that you can't hear anywhere else in the Detroit area, all done by local WHFR staff members. And that's all filled up. Yeah, we've got all the hours. We have a different show each week, every month, and even the fifth Tuesday. Some months there are, you know, a fifth day of that same day of the week. All filled up. So Monday, last week, we featured a couple of shows, podcasts, as they're called, from very professional sources. They sound like radio shows, but they're not broadcast anywhere in this area, so we wanted to share them with you. It was this last Monday. It was the Sierra Club Radio and Planetary Society Radio sharing with you ecology news, environmental news, and then Planetary Society was about astronomy and space news. So hope you enjoyed that. This coming Monday, I have decided that we're going to feature Philosophy Talks and an episode of Philosophy Talks. See what you think of it. Monday, 6 to 7 p.m. We don't have it archived yet for you to listen to, but that'll be up and running in a week or so. Philosophy Talks this Monday from 6 to 7 will be the topic of atheism and the well-lived life. And so I hope that'll be challenging to you. Again, philosophers try to see things from many different points of view. You may not agree with some of the points of view, but Philosophy Talks has been a podcast that's been going on for years now, and they used to charge humble radio stations like WHFR for the right to broadcast them, and they're not doing it anymore. So thank you very much, Philosophy Talks. And so each Monday we're going to feature a variety of different shows that I've grabbed from the internet on Monday, the WHFR Monday Forum, and I hope you get a chance to listen to that. And as I said, it will be podcast, so you can listen anytime. Just look for the Monday date on our website when we get that up and running in about a week or so. So Philosophy Talks coming up this coming Monday from 6 to 7 p.m., Atheism and the Well-Lived Life. Okay. Now, okay. Now we turn. I can't hear Dennis. Here we go.
Sometimes
Dennis.
That's better, right?
Not at all.
We have a lot here.
Well, the big story is the ballot one? Proposals.
Oh, yep.
For millage increase, and I wanted to briefly say I mentioned the source here because that's important too. Dennis, we're going to try to cover that. I'm just giving him a couple things from my folder here.
All right.
We were notified of a special meeting of the Dearborn City Council by Bryant Library supporter, friends of the Bryant Library supporter, Mary Jo Duravaj, and we thank her for letting us know about that meeting, because I was searching even on the City of Dearborn website. I didn't see a date or an agenda.
No, you're right.
For this special meeting on Tuesday. And how special was it? They were making the final decision on which millage increase proposals would be on the ballot for November. Now, we knew that was coming. And there is a deadline when they have to do it in order to get it, the ballot proposal, make it official, and so on. I knew it was sometime in July. But that meeting, if I hadn't heard about it from Mary Jo Duravage, there was no notification. We're on the email list for public information from the city.
Sure.
Nothing on their website, nothing from their public information office about that special meeting and how important it was. Last chance to give input about what you wanted. Now, there were supporters, thanks to Mary Jo Duravage and her email list, from the Library of Dearborn, many libraries in Dearborn. The supporters of those libraries were there, but primarily it was a huge group of police and fire officers because there was a question of whether or not, there'd be a proposal maybe to end minimum staffing, which is in our charter now, which was only got in our charter over the last 6-7 years for both the police and fire.
You mean minimum staffing?
Minimum staffing.
Right.
Yeah, and would that be negated or would it be reduced by a ballot proposal? It would be a question because that would save the city money if they didn't have to collect and save money for minimum staffing.
So to recap from my own understanding, what it is they budget for having X number, a minimum staff of firemen and policemen, and even though they don't have that minimum number, they still budget for it. And some might say that money might be wasted. It could go elsewhere. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what I've read between the lines, what I've actually seen in the details, not between the lines, I've seen in the details the last couple stories. Since 2006, even though it's in the charter that the police and the fire department should have so many people on staff, the city has never met the minimum standards that the people of Dearborn thought they were getting.
Yet they still budget for it.
But they do have to budget for it. So they don't like that.
They do it, but they do it knowingly.
Why not? And I've asked a number of people connected, and I can't mention their names off the record. Someone said that the rank and file of the police and fire department don't want the minimum staffing numbers to be attained
because overtime?
They get more overtime work to make up the difference.
I understand.
And they're in a majority, so you know politics. The leaders, if a vote comes up, they have to follow the will of the majority. And the majority are, but that's, so we're getting that sort of coverage, you might say, in Dearborn, I think. It's not that we're in a dangerous situation. We don't have minimum staffing, but we're overworking in a way. Apparently, a lot of police and firemen, rookies, they're getting more chance to make more money on the side, if you will, in their profession that they're well trained for in the first place.
Right.
But it raises the question of why do we need these people overworked? You know, can an overworked professional of any sort do as good a job? An overworked doctor? I think a lot of hospitals are cutting back on their staffing and scheduling because overworked doctors, you know, 14-hour-a-day shifts, they're going to make some mistakes.
Right, but we have no idea to the degree, if any, that they're being overworked. I know what you're saying, but the real issue
is... We can't
say
for sure.
No, but the real issue is the fact that don't have a minimum standard if you're not going to meet it anyway.
That's what I would think.
Exactly, yeah. And if you're going to budget for it, that money, let's face it, this is a classic example of the money being earmarked for a specific thing and it's not being used. So what do they do with the money?
Well, I don't know, they save it somewhere, but one of the things that Council President Tofelsky said, and this is in the article of patch.com, Dearborn.
Right.
That's where we got this. We want to thank Jessica Carreras, who actually wrote the story.
Yes.
And she must have been at the meeting Tuesday. And you suggested to me, Dennis, well, I'm sure that someone at the Press and Guide will get it on their website, pressandguide.com, by now. No, not even this morning.
Not even this morning.
Not a mention of this. And, of course, nothing on the City of Dearborn website, even though it's official. And, in fact, I even went to, City Council minutes.
That's exactly what I did.
And there's only four entries that you could download. Two are from February, and two are from April.
Right.
What is that? March didn't exist? Where's May? Where's June? Where's last Tuesday's meeting? Somebody is not updating their website very promptly. So how do you find out if you're a citizen of Dearborn what the heck has happened? I guess you can call one of your council members.
Or listen to our station. But the point is if you don't know about a meeting and then you can't find out what happened at it after the fact, then it's pointless.
Well, okay, let's just keep with this minimum staffing thing. As it worked out, because both unions, fire and police in Dearborn, both of the unions' position were that we can continue to negotiate and work with the city to have reduced staffing levels. We're willing to do that for mm-hmm. the good of the city. President Tefelsky said, wait a minute, that doesn't seem right. The people of Dearborn voted for minimum staffing, and we've got to collect the money in the first place. And they deserve to get it. It's not right for even a union, elected representatives of the fire and police, to negotiate with the city to undercut the city charter. It's just not right. So I guess he was in favor of something going on the ballot to see what the people would think about that. And one of the advisory questions that, and this is unusual, there's going to be four advisory questions on the ballot for the people of Dearborn about what should we cut or what should we put on the ballot next time around.
Very specific things.
Yeah. And so, but let's cover what did pass. First of all, what did pass was what Mayor O'Reilly had said he thought he needed. Which is an additional 3.5 mils. It always was 3.5. Mm-hmm. And it's if approved by the voters, it would be in effect for the next 5 years.
Grant or sunset clause, right?
Sunset clause. It'll cut off after 5 years. So they can't go beyond that. They'd have to ask for a renewal or less or more, whatever. I mean, hopefully, if property values go up, the economy gets better, then the income won't need any additional millage.
Is that in addition to the amount that they said we can do without any consent?
Right. They have already put in place a 1.5 mil That's increase right. because the state law allows them to go up to 15 mils total.
Got it.
Now, by comparison, I should just say our general manager, Susan McGraw, here was telling me that she lives in Garden City. Mm-hmm. They're in such deep doo-doo.
Yeah, no.
Can I say doo-doo? I mean, unable to do things. That's what I mean, folks. Not do. Need to do. Okay, I didn't say. Okay. Anyway, they're in such deep trouble over there that they asked, get this, a millage increase of 12 mils. Not 3.5, not 1.5.
Oh, my gosh.
And it got voted down last year. Well, they're still in trouble. So coming up November, they got another 12 mils or more that they're going to try to get on top of whatever. Somebody has not been managing that city very well in their budget for quite a few years.
Right.
And, of course, we had sort of an emergency fund, rainy day fund, that was quite large. And that's going to be almost totally gone, right. Down to minimum 10% in another year. So we've been sort of living on that's help. And so we don't need quite as much. But we need, according to the mayor, and I think now the council said too, we need the other 3.5,
yeah.
At least for the next 5 mils. And they're asking the people of Dearborn to consider voting for it. They put it on the ballot. They're saying we need it. They'll make the case. I'm sure we'll hear a lot about it at homecoming and on through the fall about right. why we need to do that. I'd like to get a few council members on the show, like Tefelsky and others to talk about it.
He looks at me with a wink.
Dennis, hopefully, will continue as my news director if I don't overwork him, and to try to schedule some of the guests for the show. But we need to know their rationale and their support for it. But I think it's helpful that it's going to go into the general fund. So it'll be decided by the mayor and the city council where that extra money is most needed, and maybe some of the advisory questions will help. What's interesting is that another millage was approved to be considered to be added on also by the voters in November. 1 mil to be raised and to be spent exclusively on the Dearborn Libraries.
Exclusively. So it's earmarked for that.
Right. However, which is just the crazy part. That's not all of which, all the money that our libraries need, even to continue. They need the equivalent of 1.25 mils. They need $4 million. The 1 mil will only generate $3 million a year. So as Tefelsky said, too, as the president, he can talk a lot more than other council people.
Right.
He said, wait a minute. Doesn't mean we're not going to close all the branches. That's still not enough money.
Right.
So if you're going to pass a millage, folks, and put it on the ballot to support the libraries, even the same way they're supported now, which I don't think is enough, why not put, it would have to be 1.25 mil. So I do think, my personal opinion, the whole city council, shame on you, why not go for 1.25? That doesn't seem like all that much more than 1.0.
Right.
If you're going to support the libraries, you're going to support them. Dearborn Heights, in the wisdom of their population, they now have a millage that says whatever amount is needed to maintain what we have now,
right,
that's what we want in place. And that's what they've had to do, was raise the millage out there. to cover the cost of the libraries they have
now. But they
now.
Knew that going in. They went in eyes wide open.
The people voted for it.
Well, here's a dilemma then. So what happens? This thing goes on the ballot. People vote to save the libraries, and they find out after the fact it wasn't enough money.
They won't save all the libraries. That's right. Some
that
of the branches
me.
Will still have to be closed unless the city coughs up the extra million.
Which they don't have.
Well, this would be new money coming in. I mean, right now they're putting out $4 million a year. So it shouldn't hurt the city to also toss in $1 million. They'd still be saving $3 million if this millage goes into effect, if the people vote for it.
Yeah.
So it's new money.
And they sold those, apartments down in Florida. So.
But why not? Well, yeah, I know. Well, I think they did. I'm not sure it's finalized, but they're real close.
Right.
It just seems crazy. Why not have worded and passed? I mean, I didn't even hear from Mary Jo Duravage or other supporters that they were even going to propose a number at this meeting. You know,
we need a
$1 million. So somebody came up with it, but we don't know. Oh, and because of the that was for the Dearborn Public Schools. I'm not sure they even made a video of that last council meeting, so we can't necessarily
see the
details.
Gets.
I'm sure
it even happened.
J. Patrick Pepper, other great writers for the Press and Guide, will have the full story in great detail by Sunday in the Sunday paper, or certainly by next Wednesday.
And we'll be talking about it next week.
And we can look at the details. What I can't find now is the exact wording of the advisory questions, because people respond to advisory questions depending on how they chose the words.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, does it sound good, or does it sound like it's going to cost you a lot of money, or
right.
just sounds like it just, of course, that none of it is required to be followed up on. An advisory question doesn't matter how people vote, but it, you know, it means something. It doesn't legally force the council, the city government, to do anything necessarily. Okay,
so
what are those four then?
What are those four? What?
Yes, I don't know. We've got a phone call here. I can't take it now. So there. And Dennis is waiting with bated breath to listen to what I'm saying here. Okay. So the minimum staffing levels were debated, but that died. Okay. It's just going to stay the way it is unless the city negotiates with other people. Okay. I'm coming to the end here. Oh, my goodness. Where are those other...
The other things that will be on the
questions?
Ballot?
Yes. The advisory questions here.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. Okay. Here it is. One is the leaf removal services.
Oh, that's right.
Do you want them to pick up the leaves from the front curb, unbagged? Because that costs a lot of money for the city. Could you get by without it?
Absolutely.
So how
yes.
do you? I think I could. But a lot of people that
you don't have any leaves.
10,000 leaves. No, I don't have a front yard.
Right.
I have a forest that I've created myself.
Right.
The guy across the street from me, God bless him, well, sort of diagonal across the street, he now has a garden in his front yard. I'm thinking, is that legal in Dearborn?
A garden?
He's raising tall tomatoes, and I would say over half of his front yard. He's got cabbage. He's got tomatoes.
What does he have in his backyard? Same thing?
I have no. Well, the front yard gets more sun.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to grow things where there's
sun. I
think
you need to get to know this person better.
And I just know is that the city says, you know, if something's taller than 6 inches,
right,
you're going to get a ticket. I mean, none of us want to give him a ticket. We think it's a great initiative.
Sure.
We think it's,
and you know he's going to have extra.
But there, I bet there's at least one person in my little cul-de-sac of I think it's six homes, probably one of them thinks that everybody's front yard should be a golf course.
Right.
Type of grass.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Perfectly short and perfectly no weeds. And so they probably are ready to call the city on him. But
he's a farmer.
I think it's fine. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
In fact, we got a story if we can cover it in time. We only got 8 minutes now. So leaf removal, yay or nay.
Okay.
They're still going to take your leaves, folks, even if this would be made into a law. This is just an advisory question, but you'd have to bag it.
Yeah, which is how everybody else does it.
Put it in big trash cans and label them as organic or something. City pools, of course. So the pool people... They're probably going to lose the pools, folks, even with that 3.5. Who knows what the city will do about the pools. But they want to hear from the people en masse, or everybody who's voting anyway, which won't even be a majority probably, but we hope so. What do you think about supporting city pools or closing them? The library system again.
Right.
Even though you're also voting on that $1 million. But there's going to be an advisory question about the library. So I don't figure that. That seems redundant. And the fourth question is about the Dearborn Historical Museum.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the question? We close it? Well, I mean, what's the question? I don't understand.
It just says what it's about.
I thought they were going to build on the land near them where they tore down a motel in West Dearborn.
Right, right.
And do something special for the museum there. I don't know. I don't know.
It's a big open lot.
I don't know what the
right
question's going to be. So we're waiting.
Is that by the McFadden House? No.
Yes. Well, the McFadden House is a historical museum.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yes, right. So we'll see what goes on there, folks. That's from Dearborn Patch. And just go to patch.com, click on Michigan, click on Dearborn. You can get the Patch newsletter sent to you every day.
Okay.
And they have business news and, you know, special cultural events.
I worked
and
with
so
them
on.
Promoting our one-act play festival, and they're really cool there.
Well, we'd like to give you the story about who and what they are. We certainly hope it doesn't put one of the Dearborn papers out of business.
They're only online.
But in terms of this story has been out there since Tuesday night. Where's the press and guide? Where's the Times Herald? I know the Times Herald doesn't have a website, I don't believe. So
they do, but it's the Downriver Sunday Times. It's part of the bigger...
I've never seen that. I don't know where it is. But
I'll show you later.
But even press and guide, didn't you have a reporter there Tuesday?
Mm.
Okay, my final point, whether or not they had a reporter there, which council members weren't there? One of the most important meetings of the year, two of them, Suzanne Serini and...
Hubbard.
Nancy Hubbard. The two, isn't it? The only two female members?
Now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, they didn't think it was important enough to attend?
They probably had
family
stuff. To
go on the record as being pro or con any of this? Very important.
Well, this is important
debate.
Stuff. Yeah, no, of this course. Is as important
well,
as it gets.
Well, ultimately, it's whatever got passed. It's up to the voters, whether it's a millage or advisory question.
Right.
So they're not really saying where they stay. But if they vote to put it on the ballot, they're sort of saying, we think this is worthy of your consideration, at least. It doesn't mean they're in favor of whatever.
Right, and I think
is,
that's so. A tricky thing, but I think you explained that really well. Yeah, just because you vote for something on the ballot means it deserves consideration. It's a great way to put it.
Okay, real quick, we have about 6 minutes. I just got a call this morning from Joanne Korchinska, our blues DJ, who comes in at 2 o'clock to start Highway 61 on Fridays and goes till 6 p.m. and hope to see her today on schedule. She was in West Dearborn and some of the people that lost power in West Dearborn, and it's been on and off. Now, I didn't have power 2 weeks ago for 3 days in a row, even right. though DTE was promising, oh, yeah, it'll be back up tonight. Yeah, well, 3 days in a row. She's had power up and down. She's just a block or so away from Mayor O'Reilly's house, in fact. I bet he didn't have. But this has been more frustrating. I mean, she thinks she's got power. She starts things going, and she loses power.
I know.
Today, which is 2 days after she got power, she had power all day yesterday, Thursday, she lost power at 2 in the morning. And at 9:30 this morning when she called me, still didn't have power, but they were promising it would be back up at 9:30. But there's no storm. What the heck is going on? Very strange repair job going on over there in West Dearborn.
Well,
up and down every 6 hours, and they think they got it fixed, and then it breaks again, and it's not a storm that's causing that up and down.
As I was leaving the farm market this morning, I took Monroe, and I just stayed on Monroe, and there's, I think it's like a high-rise retirement complex.
Yeah, several there's on that.
By beach, a tree from the right-hand side as I was driving south fell across the road. This must have happened, you know, a week ago or whatever, and it's still on top of the line.
Oh, my gosh.
The electric line is below the tree. And I know, Joanne, I feel for everybody that didn't have power, you for 3 days. We never lost power, thankfully, but... Man, there were some bigger issues. You see all the houses on fire, and people lost their roofs. And I mean, this was Dearborn was hit extremely hard.
I would say it's tornado-like storms
both
times.
That's exactly right.
Because we had trees Monday. Mostly, my neighborhood wasn't too damaged from Monday. It was West Dearborn that got mostly hit. But we had three trees, just count them, three, that were 40, 50 feet high that got pulled out by the roots, and not just bent down. They were twisted. Upside, they came down like spears through one house roof.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about branches that are a foot or two across. Yeah. A couple blocks over.
Right,
but
right.
in my neighborhood,
oh my
Springwell
gosh.
Park over there, they came down like three massive spears into the roof. And they had to, you know, people were there Tuesday and Wednesday, three, four huge trucks. And they were cutting off the trunk, but they still had the branches stuck through the roof like spears in three different locations of this one house.
Yeah, it's like
I
a tornado.
Trust nobody was underneath those areas.
No,
but only a tornado could lift something up and then send it back down like that. That's not just 70-mile-an-hour winds.
No.
That's something that has a suction, you know, it pulls it up. So we were hurt, and the papers, both Press and Gaetano, said, oh, city was recovering now from two big storms. We're still recovering, and these weren't your regular storms. These were tornado-like blitzes. And
that's why I feel bad for people without power, awful. But I appreciate their patience, because you have to believe DTE is doing what they can. Can we really quick, I know you have your list there, but I want to talk about Concert of Colors, because we're going to be down there broadcasting. I know you'll be down there, Jay. Are you going to be on the air at
both
all?
Both days.
Okay.
Well, if the other staff members let me.
Oh, yeah, we'll get you on. You
broadcasting
and I will get
from
on.
The diversity stage from 5 to 9 approximately those hours, both tomorrow and Sunday. The live music. It's going to be the entertainment. We'll try not to talk too much, Dennis.
Well, yeah. Okay. You and me. But no, the whole point is that we have a great time every year, and I want people to listen, but even better, come down. This is free. A very, very family-friendly event that's absolutely 100% free to get in, to enjoy the music. Now, you can buy food. You can there's things going on around it. But it's downtown at the Max Fisher Building. That's right on Woodward, downtown Detroit, 15 minutes from Dearborn, maybe. And it starts tomorrow. Jay, what time, I think?
Doors open at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the music will go until 10, 11 o'clock at night, all free on both stages.
It's amazing.
Indoors in the Fisher Center. Max M. Fisher.
Max M. Fisher.
And also known as Orchestra Hall, which is the larger stage.
Don was. He's a Detroit. Should I call him a legend? I mean, he's been in Detroit for a long, long time. He will be down there again with his all-star, what does he call it, the all-star review?
It's like a Motown review. There's Motown and other Detroit artists. They're just a great variety of people.
Yeah, October there, Babies, so. The Mugs. I mean, this is a really, really cool thing. So, yeah, come on down there. We're actually going to be broadcasting live. Listen to the station.
And we'll have a separate table out in the lobby, so you can't miss us. They have some newsletters and pens to hand out for free, so I hope to see you down there.
All right, cool.
Just a couple things that you should look into. We can't cover them here. We're only about a minute or so to go, although we're going to wait for Joanne to walk in, I think. But Morris Goodman in Press and Guide last Sunday, he's actually he's in favor of the recall of Governor Snyder. And we've seen those petitions circulating around.
They're having parties up for this.
Don't know if they're going to get to the 800,000 signatures they need to get on the November ballot, but that's a very interesting question. It's obviously a frustration for a governor, especially I think the governor in Wisconsin has got a similar effort that was started from all the people that have lost out.
I think
out
he started it first,
on monies of one sort or another, and wherever you stand on that. But I'm just saying, read Morris Goodman's editorial opinion from July 10th in the Press and Guide, probably at pressandguide.com also. But he continued asking for recalls. I guess he was in the recall spirit this last Wednesday, the 13th, in the Press and Guide. He's asking Judge Summers to step down. So he's not saying we should start a recall because there wouldn't be time, but it will be the court system that he can ask the court system to pay for what now is almost $1.2 million of court fees, fines, for two decisions that jury trials said he shouldn't have done, that he shouldn't have dismissed people for the reasons that he thought were good. They sued, and they've gotten, one person got $460,000 in settlement, and the other one more recently, Julie Pucci, fiance of the other district court judge, William Lundgren, $700,000+. So, and there's one more case to be decided. So
it's pending right now, yeah.
What do you think? Do you think Judge Summers should step down and make room for someone else because that he made these bad decisions that are going to cost the court system a lot? Or do you sort of agree with the reasons behind them? Read the paper, find